With less than 1 week from our first presidential debate, the Supreme Court is also set to rule on two cases that will impact the 2024 race.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo. And now your host, Logan Seculo.
Welcome to Seculo. We already have some calls lined up. We're going to take one of those right off the top because we have a busy week coming up as we wrap up this, you know, heading into what is the last week of June, which is crazy. We know next week what we're going to have is the first presidential debate between President Biden and President Trump. First time, I believe, or at least in modern history, first time in a long time, that two of a current president and a former president will debate each other for who will be the chosen president for this year. It's crazy. It's a wild time. We're going to have a packed week. We're going to go through the rules of that as well. But I'm going to take Karen's call in Georgia right off the top. Karen in Georgia, you're on the air.
Thank you. I want to know really the underlying reason of why Democrats are pushing for all this migration. At first, we were thinking it was due to voting for Democrats, but now I'm hearing it's because the Democrats want to establish a socialist government. Can you help me to understand how that would tie in?
Sure. Yeah, I think that there is some conversation to be had there. I do think a lot of it right now, and the reason now you're seeing, okay, now we're gonna close the border right now, is because of political impact. I think it's all done for political show. I actually think probably the biggest detriment to the American system, the American electoral system, if you will, is the fact that a sitting active president has to then go spend a year or 2 years running for his second term. I'm actually of the version, and maybe that, you know, this is controversial, that maybe there shouldn't be a two-term presidency. Maybe we should have a one-term that's a little bit longer presidency, because you're wasting 2 years of your time on politics. And really what's happening at the border, a lot of it is politics because it sounds good. It's like the Gaza Pier. It sounds good to be helping people. But what we really know is you're helping terrorists at the border. It sounds good to be helping people who are seeking a better life. I'm all for that. Let's figure out a way to do that in a proper and legal way. But that's not what's happening. What you're having is people are flooding over the border, whether that is just to visit family or whether that is for some very nefarious way things. And we've seen that as terrorist cells have been stopped in our country. And we know they made their way through the southern border, whether they likely did not originate there. They flew to Mexico or flew somewhere and then went to where they knew their vulnerable spots in the border. So yeah, do I think that it's to generate votes? Yes, but maybe not in the traditional way of, yeah, eventually those will turn into voters. And then maybe you could say that will be impacting a more of a Democrat-leaning population. But we've seen that change this time. So all bets are off. So Karen, hopefully that answers your question as well. As we are just, like I said, under a week away from the first presidential debate, I'm going to hit you with these rules real quick. And I want your thoughts on the rules. Put in the comments what you think about these rules. And again, President Trump agreed to these rules because he was smart enough to say, I don't care. I'm showing up and I'm going to be there. And what I'm hoping is in a week, we're going to be like, he made the right decision. Let's see here. So the rules, no opening statements allowed. I do like that. You know, we've heard from President Trump and President Biden enough. We know the general, let's get down to business here. I dig that one. Onstage positions are determined by a coin flip. So who goes first? You know, who has essentially the advantage, if you will? That's going to be decided by a coin flip because, I mean, how else are you going to do it? I mean, it sounds ridiculous that that's where we are, but okay, it's by a coin flip. And then you have a 90-minute event. Two commercial breaks are allowed. Microphones will be cut when the time is up. They will have closing statements, and of course, there'll be no audience. The debate moderators are Jake Tapper and Dana Bash. It will be a heck of a show. All of us are going to be watching. It's going to be CNN's biggest ratings, which isn't saying much, but their biggest ratings in probably decades. So that will be pretty interesting. We're also waiting currently for two big Supreme Court rulings that will affect the 2024 presidential race. It's Fisher versus the United States and, of course, the presidential immunity case. But, hey, I want to take a minute as we head into the next segment to, one, thank you all for supporting the work of the ACLJ. We've seen some spikes of people. As I've told you, June can be a slow month for fundraising. I'm just honest with you and say it's summer. People are on vacation. People aren't listening or aren't as active as much as they were during, you'd say, during the school year, if you will. That always helps. So in these months that are a little quieter, we really could use your support. We've had an amazing amount of support already. And I encourage you to join us right now. Become an ACLJ champion if you can. Then you don't have to worry about it. And by the way, you pick what that means. It's a recurring donation that happens every month, but you pick the price. So say you can only give $5, $10, that's great. Doesn't bother us at any level. You can scan the QR code on your screen right now or just go to aclj.org/champions. That's aclj.org/champions. Packed show coming up.
to Seculo. I'm here in Washington, D.C. This is Jordan Seculo, Logan and Will in our studios in our production facilities. And we've got Rick Rennell, senior advisor at the ACLJ. And Rick, I wanted to go right to this as the campaign heats up. And obviously the left, especially, I mean, let's just not even call it the left. This is the liberal media, mainstream liberal media, trying to, I guess, cover up what we are all seeing in real time, Rick, which is these videos of the, I guess, President Biden just not knowing where he is. I mean, it's happening more and more. And I think as the campaign heats up and we've got debates coming up and these other kind of events, I mean, if you can't get through a sit down with Jimmy Kimmel and President Obama in a friendly environment and walk off the stage without the help from the former president, President Obama, that is not a cheap fake to show that to the American people. It's fair to show the American people the state of the president that they are going to have to make a decision about whether they're going to reelect or not.
Look, the propaganda arm of the Democratic Party, the media in America, is really in a dangerous situation. They are helping a regime, hook, line, and sinker. They always take the side of the Democrats. They pushed the Democratic messaging. They've lost their credibility. And I can, you know, promise you that dictators around the world are looking at the control that the Democratic Party has over the media in America, and they're jealous. Because with every single thing we see, we can watch a video and the media says, you're not watching this in the right way, or it's a fake. And so many in the media repeat that, but look at the video and you will see Barack Obama with his hand on Joe Biden and he doesn't let up. He literally takes him by the wrist, then he takes him by the arm, then he takes him by the back. It happens all the way off stage. And this is the problem that people see. It is, come on, Joe, you need to go with us, and I'm going to escort you all the way to the end. This is troubling. People see it for what it is. And I think that the story is now becoming the media cover-up.
Yeah, I mean, I want to play this from Nicole Wallace. We played the first part of her statement trying to say, you know, these are cheap fakes. But then she tries to turn this on President Trump as well. And Rick, I want you to hear it and for our audience to take a listen.
Cheap fakes, videos of real events that are intentionally manipulated to fool viewers, released on an RNC opposition research social media account with zero independent fact-checking by these so-called journalists and spread throughout the right-wing ecosystem. And we would take the hand-wringing by right-wing media about Biden's mental fitness in videos intentionally manipulated to make him look unfit, maybe a little more seriously, if they weren't radio silent about the repeated glaring and real mental lapses happening behind podiums and on camera on the part of Donald Trump.
So, I mean, again, Rick, I just your reaction, because one, I always kind of chuckle at Nicole Wallace. She was communications director for President George W. Bush at a time when you were likely serving in the administration as well. She worked on the Bush campaign for the reelection campaign when I worked there. And then once she figured out, hey, I can make more money being a former Republican turned liberal on MSNBC, and they'll give me a platform to talk and sell my books, I'll just switch parties and start attacking Republicans. And that's exactly what she's done here. But I see this even by a caller, and we'll go to that caller. I don't want to steal it from completely. But Rick, what they've said is they can't unsee this. People can't unsee what they are watching in the news. So they can call these things whatever they want. But so long as people are still able to see these videos, now they're trying to pressure news agencies not to show them. But as long as people see these videos, they get kind of embedded in your head. And I think they're worried that that's going to even get worse with debates and with conventions and when the campaign gets tougher. And then when you get in the ballot box and think about, do I really think this guy can do another 4 years as the most important leader of the world?
Yeah, look, the video doesn't lie. All the spinning is silly to try to pretend like we're not watching this or that it's fake. People see it. They see it for themselves. This is the problem that the media has with social media, because social media is really just you and I. It's anybody posting a video. And what the legacy media doesn't like is they lose control of the narrative. So they attack it. They call it misinformation. They say, you know, the social media is out of control. It needs to be controlled by Facebook or Instagram or Twitter. You know, all of these institutions need to have people that are figuring out what's right. They're trying to push their editors. The legacy media is trying to push their editors onto social media so that they can also grip it, control it, strangle it, and use it for exactly what they do with newspapers and with cable shows that are completely left-wing. If you're watching MSNBC, you don't see any dissenting view. They could have 8 guests. Every single one of them agrees. There's no dissent.
Yeah, doesn't even matter if they have an R next to their name. They all end up agreeing. I mean, that's the joke of MSNBC. They may have an R next to their name, but they are no longer really affiliated with the traditional, I guess, Republican Party that is actually trying to win the next elections, whether that's the presidential elections, the Senate elections, House elections, state elections as well. I do want to go to the phones, though, because I took that from Michael in Florida Online, too, and I wanted to make sure you had time to talk to us, Rick. Hey, Michael, you are on the air with Jordan and Rick Grinnell.
Thank you. Good afternoon, guys. Yeah, the problem that the Dems have is the fact that, you know, this it might be one thing if it was a onesie, twosie kind of thing. But I can't unsee it now that it's happened time after time after time. And then when you listen to KGB's explanation of what we just saw, I just simply rolled my eyes. I'm like, come on. Or as Joe would say, yeah, come on, man.
Come on, man. Do we have that response from Creed Jean-Pierre that we can play, guys?
Yep.
Yes, we do.
Let's play it right now. Let's play it.
Bite one. Hold on. Here we go.
Yeah, and I think you all have called this the cheap fakes video, and that's exactly what they are. They are cheap fakes video. They are done in bad faith, and some of your news organization have been very clear, have stressed that these right wing critics of the president have a credibility problem because of the fact checkers have repeatedly caught them pushing misinformation, disinformation.
Okay. I mean, Rick, again, going back to you, now this is official. This is not just Nicole Wallace at MSNBC. This is the White House press secretary calling out reporters, calling out news agencies for showing people videos. They're not making up. This is not AI. This is not, again, and as the caller said, it's not once or twice. You give people a pass for that. Sometimes you stumble, you trip up a stair, whatever. People can, you know, move on. But when it's every time there's a public event, something bizarre is happening, and you think these events are just going to get tougher the next few months, the liberal media is trying to shame us into not showing this to the American people.
Look, I think the media, the legacy media, have such a credibility problem that you'll watch, you'll notice that they now are shoving this onto the fact checkers. They want, you know, this independent, so-called independent, which it's not independent, to be fact-checking and talking about misinformation. Let me just give you a little hint. When you hear fact-checkers or you hear misinformation, it's the Democrats' way of saying, let me have my guy tell you that you're wrong. They crush dissenting information. And this video that we're watching of Obama walking Biden off a stage in Hollywood, that video is the fact-checking. It's showing that Nicole Wallace is wrong. It's showing that Corinne Jean-Pierre is wrong. That is the fact-checking. It's not a fake. It's not a biased journalist or reporter saying something. It is showing the world the truth. The video doesn't lie.
No, and Rick, they know at the end of the day, these videos are going to be playing on repeat in battleground states across the country, and they're probably going to get worse, especially with debates. We appreciate you, of course, coming on and joining us, Rick Rennell, a senior analyst, of course, for foreign policy and national security, a member of President Trump's cabinet and former ambassador to Germany, but again, a communication specialist as well. And folks, we have members of our team like this because of your financial support of the ACLJ. I'm here in our Washington, D.C. office where we are expanding right now. So we need your financial support. We need you to donate today at ACLJ.org. We've been meeting, I've been up here meeting with U.S. senators, kind of preparing for the post of the next elections and make sure we're ready for all of the different scenarios at the ACLJ and ACLJ Action. Donate today at ACLJ.org. We need your support. We'll be right back.
Jordan, we have Christy Compagnone, who is our senior managing attorney here at the ACLJ, joining us to talk about and give an update on that case out in Nevada. You'll remember that is the one where the high school student was forced to perform an obscene monologue in one of her high school classes. And we have been suing the school district on behalf of that student and fighting back against the obscenity that was produced in this curriculum. And they actually have some updates from last week as they were out in Nevada. And Jordan, I'll let you take it.
Yeah, I mean, Christy, we know people have seen on this broadcast the video of the mother in this situation going to the school board meeting and being shut down because she read some of the monologue and it was too obscene to read for adults at the school board meeting, but not too obscene for, at the time, you know, 15-year-olds to be reading out in class as part of a required reading that you had to perform other people's monologues. So we've been, again, taking the depositions both last week. I think there's more coming this week as well. Tell people where we are in this case and just kind of remind them. It's a great way to remind people about when the ACLJ takes these cases on, it's not just the day that it makes the news and the day that you've got the video of the mother at the school board meeting. We fight these for years if we have to.
Yeah, exactly. So last week we deposed a school administrator, the teacher, and several students. And I'll be honest, it was rather alarming to realize that this kind of ideology is permeating the school completely. The school clearly doesn't see how damaging the sexualization of students is, and they're not willing to take any responsibility for that. In fact, administrators mentioned that all of the students talk this way regularly anyway, and that you can hear it in the hallways, so it doesn't really see why it's that big of a deal. So we really feel like we need to go back next week and take more depositions. We're going to hear from other school officials, and we want to get more of their thoughts on this responsibility of the school. And, you know, do they have a responsibility to protect these students from this rampant sexualization that we're seeing? Even if students are saying that in their own time, can a 14 or 15-year-old actually consent to read that out loud in the classroom? And then we're also right. going to hopefully talk with more students, too, to get their thoughts and reflections on it.
Yeah, I mean, these are the kind of things if you would have said back in school, even I think unthinkable to say, definitely remember when we were in school, if I was in school, I mean, you would be in serious trouble. It doesn't matter if you're in a public school, private school, Christian school, regular, you know, any kind of place of education. There's no way you were just walking down the hallway using language like this. I'm sure things have changed. I don't doubt that there's more of this kind of language being used, and you've got social media and places like that. You could, on the one hand, feel for these districts. But if they are pushing it, because I think, Christy, what has to be important here is when they have those students are minors. When this was all happening, they were all minors, so they can't consent to using obscenities, and their parents weren't being asked to consent to their students doing that. And I think that's very important for our audience to kind of understand these distinctions. These cases take time, but it's the parents' rights that we're fighting for here. And it's like in these schools, I know they'd love to have no parental rights, but that's what we're fighting for, is kind of the last hope of parents still having some say in their own own children's upbringing in these public schools.
Exactly. How is there possibly a pedagogical interest for the school to be allowing the students to read this? I mean, even in the most sensitive of topics in health ed, you are getting parental consent, even in these public schools. I know for a fact that in several schools in Virginia, that they're required to ask permission to read a book such as The Kite Rider, which is actually historical, but it has really sensitive and severe sexualized topics. So why then is it appropriate, just because it's a theater class, that they be able to enact and actually memorize and recite this kind of content? It doesn't make any sense from the purpose of trying to teach them something for theater class. It doesn't make sense in an English class, and it just doesn't have a place in these schools.
Christy, we filed the amended complaint in this last May, so 13 months ago. And we survived a motion to dismiss early, which was a big victory in this case for the student. And now we're in this deposition phase. And I know you said you've got more after what was learned last week that you need to go back out and depose more individuals. What does the timeline look like on this as we move forward? What comes next in this case?
Absolutely. So at this point, our discovery timeline, which is when we can take the depositions and ask all of the questions and speak with the witnesses, that's ending at the end of June. But we have asked the court for an extension because we believe at this point it's important to bring in an expert witness to actually testify to what is pedagogical. What does that mean? Does this have a legitimate pedagogical interest for this theater classroom? And so if the judge permits, we're going to bring in an expert witness to be able to get that on the record with an expert report. From there, we go into what's called summary judgment briefing. And that's where we will tell the judge there's no evidence here that you know, says that what our complaints facts are not correct. So we say, look, all of the evidence is here. We don't need to go in front of a jury. From just a pure legal standpoint, you can rule for us in favor of us. Whereas the other side will ask for the court to dismiss the claim before it goes to trial. So that's the next real hurdle we've got to face is making it through summary judgment. But of course, at this point, I think there is such a dispute of facts that we are more than likely going to be going to trial here.
All right, folks. Christy, we thank you for that update, and we want you to continue to update our the ACLJ, our supporters, as well, because as they know, I mean, again, you know, 13 months in filing, surviving again motions to dismiss, then doing the depositions, then summary judgment, trying to survive that, and then going to trial. This is that commitment that the ACLJ makes to these issues, and Christy, we appreciate you joining us today on the show. And Will, I mean, again, I think it as we talk other issues today, we talk about Israel, where we commit to the offices. Of course, here in the United States, we have offices around the country. I'm in the office in Washington, D.C. This week, where Christy usually is. But on these legal issues that are fact-specific, that start out with a parent and a teacher, sometimes, you know what, the school district says, you were right, ACLJ. We shouldn't have let this happen. Can't believe this happened. And, you know, we get a quick fix, a quick win. But, Will, more often than not, these days, we're having to fight because we're fighting up against a very different kind of school, school district, and school board.
That's right. And unfortunately, it is starting to become a trend where it doesn't just get settled with a simple demand letter, as we've had vast success with for decades at the ACLJ. But many times what we're seeing now is that either the offenses were so egregious that it can't just be remedied by a demand letter, or that the demand letter isn't taken seriously or is ignored, and therefore we have to go to court. And that's why your support of the ACLJ, we're able to offer that service to these families who, just by sending their kids to school, we're never thinking they were going to have to file lawsuits against that school. But we're seeing that's a reality. It's at no cost to them, so they don't have to worry about funds from their pocketbooks not being able to put food on the table or to pay for the life of their family to fight this in court, because the ACLJ members play such a pivotal role in that by allowing us to offer those services at no cost to our clients.
Donate today at ACLJ.org. A second half hour is coming up as Will takes the reins of the broadcast. We've got Jeff Balaban joining us live from Israel. You don't want to miss that. But go to ACLJ.org and donate today. We'll be right back.
keeping you informed and engaged. Now more than ever. This is Seculo. And now your host, Logan Seculo.
Welcome to Seculo. We already have some calls lined up. We're going to take one of those right off the top because we have a busy week coming up as we wrap up this, you know, heading into what is the, you know, the last week of June, which is crazy. We know next week what we're going to have is the first presidential debate between President Biden, President Trump. First time, I believe, or at least in modern history, first time in a long time, that two of a current president and a former president will debate each other for who will be the chosen president for this year. It's crazy. It's a wild time. We're going to have a packed week. We're going to go through the rules of that as well. But I'm going to take Karen's call in Georgia right off the top. Karen in Georgia, you're on the air.
Thank you. I want to know really the underlying reason of why Democrats are pushing for all this migration. At first, we were thinking it was due to voting for Democrats. But now I'm hearing it's because the Democrats want to establish a socialist government. Can you help me to understand how that would tie in?
Sure. Yeah, I think that there is some conversation to be had there. I do think a lot of it right now, and the reason now you're seeing, okay, now we're gonna close the border right now, is because of political impact. I think it's all done for political show. I actually think probably the biggest detriment to the American system, the American electoral system, if you will, is the fact that a sitting active president has to then go spend a year or 2 years running for his second term. I'm actually of the version, and maybe that, you know, this is controversial, that maybe there shouldn't be a two-term presidency. Maybe we should have a one-term that's a little bit longer presidency, because you're wasting 2 years of your time on politics. And really what's happening at the border, a lot of it is politics because it sounds good. It's like the Gaza Pier. It sounds good to be helping people. But what we really know is you're helping terrorists at the border. It sounds good to be helping people who are seeking a better life. I'm all for that. Let's figure out a way to do that in a proper and legal way. But that's not what's happening. What you're having is people are flooding over the border, whether that is just to visit family, or whether that is for some very nefarious way things. And we've seen that as terrorist cells have been stopped in our country, and we know they made their way through the southern border, whether they likely did not originate there. They flew to Mexico or flew somewhere and then went to where they knew their vulnerable spots in the border. So yeah, do I think that it's to generate votes? Yes, but maybe not in the traditional way of, yeah, eventually those will turn into voters, and then maybe you could say that will be impacting a more of a Democrat-leaning population. But we've seen that change this time. So all bets are off. So Karen, hopefully that answers your question as well. As we are just, like I said, under a week away from the first presidential debate, I'm going to hit you with these rules real quick. And I want your thoughts on the rules. Put in the comments what you think about these rules. And again, President Trump agreed to these rules because he was smart enough to say, I don't care. I'm showing up and I'm going to be there. And what I'm hoping is in a week, we're going to be like, he made the right decision. Let's see here. So the rules, no opening statements allowed. I do like that. You know what? We've heard from President Trump and President Biden enough. We know the general. Let's get down to business here. I dig that one. Onstage positions are determined by a coin flip. So who goes first? You know, who has essentially the advantage, if you will? That's going to be decided by a coin flip because, I mean, how else are you going to do it? I mean, it sounds ridiculous that that's where we are, but okay, it's by a coin flip. And then you have a 90-minute event. Two commercial breaks are allowed. Microphones will be cut when the time is up. They will have closing statements, and of course, there'll be no audience. The debate moderators are Jake Tapper and Dana Bash. It will be a heck of a show. All of us are going to be watching. It's going to be CNN's biggest ratings, which isn't saying much, but their biggest ratings in probably decades. So that will be pretty interesting. We're also waiting currently for two big Supreme Court rulings that will affect the 2024 presidential race. It's Fisher versus the United States and, of course, the presidential immunity case. But, hey, I want to take a minute as we head into the next segment to, one, thank you all for supporting the work of the ACLJ. We've seen some spikes of people. As I've told you, June can be a slow month for fundraising. I'm just honest with you and say it's summer. People are on vacation. People aren't listening or aren't as active as much as they were during the school year, if you will. That always helps. So in these months that are a little quieter, we really could use your support. You've had an amazing amount of support already, and I encourage you to join us right now. Become an ACLJ champion if you can. Then you don't have to worry about it. And by the way, you pick what that means. It's a recurring donation that happens every month, but you pick the price. So say you can only give $5, $10, that's great. Doesn't bother us at any level. You can scan the QR code on your screen right now or just go to aclj.org/champions. That's aclj.org/champions. Packed show coming up. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Seculo. Executive producer Will Haynes sitting in today. And I am now joined by Jeff Balaban, who is the director of our ACLJ Jerusalem office. Jeff, what we're seeing yesterday with the video that Prime Minister Netanyahu put out, calling on the Biden administration to really live up to their end of the deal, talking about conversations he had with Secretary Blinken about these arms and munitions shipments and transfers and agreements that the United States has with Israel. It seems like the prime minister is kind of fed up with the administration. We've seen the slow burn, if you will, of the relationship between President Biden and Prime Minister Netanyahu, as it's been rocky for the last few months. But now it does kind of seem like the prime minister has had enough. What was your take when you saw this video from the prime minister, as well as the reaction from the White House?
So I want to contextualize this. This problem didn't start recently, and it wasn't started on Israel's side. From the beginning, when Joe Biden became president, if you recall, he completely ignored and snubbed Israel. He treated Bibi terribly. He refused to talk to him for months and months and months. And then there was pressure because it was looking so obvious and so bad. And let's face it, most Americans still support Israel. Just Biden administration was running towards its left. And so there was some pressure, and he met. But even when he met, it was very cold. He met with members of the opposition, other people beforehand. I don't know if it was members of the opposition, but he certainly met with the president before he met with the prime minister. And the president was from a different party originally. He's not in the party now. He's the president. So this has been a longstanding thing. And the truth is, since the Obama-Biden administration, they started by demonizing Netanyahu specifically and his party. And they've been doing it all along. So this is the war. One would have hoped the horrific October 7th attacks would have ameliorated that. But instead, what we see is that Biden really, they say one thing out of one side of their mouths and behave a different way in private. And that is, they say we support Israel. On the other hand, they have been withholding and withholding and pressuring and frankly extorting Israel all along. Now, in Israel, this is not primarily a political matter. It's a literal survival matter. And so, and not political survival, physical survival. And what happened, this is still a very traumatized society waging an ongoing war. And I'll just give an example of what that means, because just earlier today, not that long ago, I was meeting with a general who's also been a minister in the government, not in the current government, but we were talking about, he's now advising the government. And I asked him militarily, how much time does Israel need to really do what it needs to in Gaza? And he said, oh, at least 3 years. We have to demilitarize Gaza. We have to take, at a minimum, take the fangs out, as he said, of the jaws of the tiger. And he said, that's 3 years. So the pressure, end it now, is destroying Israel's ability to just survive. And the Arab world, some Arab friends now, but the Arab anti-Israel world and the rest of the anti-Israel world, Iran, they see it and it's strengthening them. So in desperation, Netanyahu did a video where he didn't yell at Biden. He paid him plenty of compliments, but he also did criticize him. I would say, frankly, very gently and diplomatically, considering the realities, what's at stake. And of course, the world exploded and many of them blamed Netanyahu. He is just trying to help his country survive.
What we have seen out of this administration when it comes to Israel and when it also comes to Iran is what you should not be seeing out of an American administration. We've seen from the beginning of this administration a hostility towards our greatest ally in the region and a willingness to turn a blind eye or to take the Iranians at their word in many scenarios. And we knew from the issues with Robert Malley as he tried to spearhead the negotiations to try to bring the Iranians back into a nuclear agreement. And then all of a sudden he doesn't have a security clearance because he was probably too close with the Iranians, as it were. That's kind of the context of this administration. But now you see that as a reaction to this video, as you mentioned, there was criticism, but it wasn't harsh. It wasn't yelling at the president, and especially with how critical our government is of the Israelis. I agree. The tone was very subdued for what I'm sure the true feelings within the prime minister are currently with this administration. But what you see as a reaction is headlines that the White House is fuming and they punish the Israelis by canceling a high-level diplomatic talks that were supposed to occur tomorrow in Washington, D.C. over the Iranian threat. So when they are upset with Israel, They punish them by giving Iran another pass. How does this square with the reality of the world when you have a very real threat? You have Hezbollah ramping up their attacks. You see imagery that don't make it on the news of hillsides burning in northern Israel because of these Iranian attacks that are through their proxy Hezbollah. But yet we're going to give Iran a pass by not do the work of the government to have diplomatic talks with Israel, as well as there's reports that some of the munitions they're concerned about are $18 billion worth of F-15s, which haven't moved forward after a hold was removed from congressional leaders. So I just don't understand why the administration is so willing to give Iran a pass, but yet still drill down and punish Israel at the same time.
I'm going to suggest, Will, that you actually do understand, and you're being diplomatic and tossing the question to me. I'm going to suggest that you understand that Joe Biden has never really been Israel's friend. And since the Obama-Biden administration, he has actually been truly Israel's enemy. Listen, Israel is America's ally. Israel is on the front lines of a war that you see. They run to America's streets, let alone the streets of the world, and they hoist a Palestinian flag and they chant, death to America, death to America, more than they chant death to Israel. This is a global anti-American evil that is funded up by Iran and by America's rivals and hostiles like China and others. And we have an absentee White House, and they're on the wrong side of this, worse than absentee. Israel is an ally, and Joe Biden is publicly trying to treat it like a puppet. And when Israel dares, in desperation, after months of truly extortion by the White House, to say, look, honestly, the good side is that Israel understands that the American public doesn't want to see an anti-Israel government. And so Israel gently, really relatively gently, goes and says, look, this is a problem, right? And it's somewhat mildly critical. Their reaction, which is to attack them, let me tell you, there's a famous story that those of us with long memories recall. When Joe Biden was a young senator back many decades ago, Menachem Begin was the prime minister of Israel, and Joe Biden directly threatened him. He was on the Foreign Affairs Committee, I think it was then, with withholding some foreign aid or some loans. And the prime minister of Israel then reacted to Joe Biden, who was young and a bully, and said, you know, we are not Jews on trembling knees, meaning don't threaten us. Jews have survived plenty. And if we have to survive without it, we'll have to. It will mean a lot more dead Jews. But you know what? In today's day and age, it also means a compromised safety for the United States of America, because the Iranians, with nuclear ambitions that this White House is not stopping but is helping, also seek intercontinental ballistic missiles, not to reach Israel. They can reach Israel already, but to reach Chicago, to reach Washington. And that is the threat to America. And this White House is exactly on the wrong side of things.
Jeff, as we look forward to the joint address of Congress that Prime Minister Netanyahu will be doing in late July, the concern that we've even heard from some of the callers is that Prime Minister Netanyahu will be coming into a city that has been witnessing rampant anti-Semitism. And I truly see it as a moment for those of us that want to combat anti-Semitism to highlight it as it comes. You know that we're going to see protests in D.C. You know that you're going to see vile pro-Hamas chanting. But I see it as an opportunity. And you have to give the Prime Minister credit for being willing to come into the cesspool of D.C. at a time like this. But that really should be incumbent upon us to point out to our friends, to our churches, to our communities, look at what they're saying in D.C. as the Prime Minister visits. And look what members of Congress are saying. I feel like it's going to be much worse than just some signs that say from the river to the sea.
Yeah. Well, here's what we know. We know that the media, no matter what happens, is going to treat this as though Benjamin Netanyahu is trying to destroy some fictitious bipartisan friendship to Israel. There is no bipartisan friendship to Israel. There are a few Democrats who aren't terrible, and there are a lot of Republicans who are great, and a few Republicans who aren't. But by and large, this is a very partisan issue and has been for a very, very long time, despite all the talking points. The media has been having a field day promoting literally Hamas's terrorist, genocidal, anti-Semitic. And so that's what's going to happen. But I love the fact that the Prime Minister of Israel will come to Congress. And you know what? That's right. Let us call out. We'll see who stands with Israel and who stands against them. And that's what they're afraid of. They don't want that to happen because they want to say they're pro-Israel and still hurt Israel. This is calling it out. And remember, they're coming at the request of the People's House. And I hope that Benjamin Netanyahu does come representing the state of Israel, our greatest ally, and that it's received by the people who need to see it well.
Thank you, Jeff, for joining us today and for your insight as you join us from Jerusalem. Folks, what you've seen already on this broadcast today, you've seen me here in our media studios. You've seen Jordan out of our D.C. offices as he meets in high-level meetings about the work of the ACLJ. You've seen Jeff in Jerusalem, literally from Jerusalem. Not many shows, especially in this space, do you see bringing on a team member that is in Jerusalem to break down the news of the day like this and the work of the organization. And you've seen Christy Compagnone call in about a case that we're fighting in Nevada for a student's rights. It takes you to keep this happening. Folks, join us today. Donate at aclj.org. And if you can, become a champion. Welcome back to Seculo. Executive producer Will Haynes sitting in today. And if you've got any calls or questions that you want to get in this segment, we've got some phone lines open. Call at 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. If you're on YouTube or Rumble, go ahead and let us know where you're calling, where you're watching from. Just go ahead and put it in the chat. It really helps boost engagement and gets the video out to more people. Like and subscribe as always. But now we're going to turn to a little bit of a hopeful story here as we talk about a lot of the issues that are going on with Israel and the fracture within the U.S. government between even not just Republicans and Democrats, but even within the Democrat Party itself. As you see, the more anti-Semitic wing led by people like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Ilhan Omar, and Rashida Tlaib. And now you're seeing people like Nancy Pelosi agree with them that maybe Prime Minister Netanyahu shouldn't have been invited to come speak to Congress. You see this growing divide between people that support our ally Israel and people that, frankly, are supporting their enemy, the terrorist organization known as Hamas. So we've heard this, and it can be very disheartening to see what's playing out in our nation's capital. But there is a little bit of potentially hopeful news that came out of Israel. And that's something, if you've been watching or following the ACLJ, you know that we had represented the families of hostages. We led a delegation to Washington, D.C., where they were able to speak to members of Congress from both parties to talk about the struggle that they have with their family members being held in captivity by Hamas. And it's long been kind of assumed at this point that many of the remaining hostages, those that hadn't been rescued, were probably no longer living. But there was a little bit of a spark of hope last week when Israel was able to rescue four hostages that were still being held by Hamas as they continue their offensive in Gaza. But what we're seeing now, and I have Cece Heil joining me in the studio, is there's a report now out of Israel. And this was something that Cece, within calls and messages with our team and, yep, and the colleagues that we work with in Israel, came out this morning that there are potentially many more hostages still living,
yeah,
that are still being held by Hamas. But it could bring some hope that more hostages could be returned to their families.
That's right. So a senior Israeli negotiator has confirmed with certainty that there are dozens of hostages still alive. That has been confirmed with certainty. And so I think that gives us hope, and it also steps up the urgency that we need to keep demanding that Hamas release the remaining hostages. And that cannot be, you know, I think they've doubled down now. Israel has doubled down saying, okay, we are in negotiations, and Hamas always stalls those negotiations. It's always, Israel will agree, they will make concession after concession, and then Hamas stalls those agreements. But right now, I think Israel has doubled down saying they cannot have any agreements unless these hostages are released. And I think that's a good position. And I think the families of the hostages, you know, have pushed and wanted that. But now that we have seen this hopeful report confirmed with certainty that dozens of the hostages are alive, they feel time is of the essence. They must move quickly. And this is not a negotiable point. They have to be released.
That's right. And unfortunately, as we've pointed out many times, is that Hamas, because of their depravity, is very good at public relations, especially when they are able to reach a community within the United States and around the world that will buy into their lies. And the Wall Street Journal last week had a piece out that says Gaza chief's brutal calculation, civilian bloodshed will help Hamas. And they had obtained, the Wall Street Journal had obtained direct messaging between Sinwar, who is the military chief of Hamas in Gaza, and other colleagues of his about things like, we have the Israelis right where we want them. And the extrapolation of that is that the more civilian Palestinians that die, the worse Israel looks, the better chances of Hamas surviving this conflict.
Yeah.
And it should prove to the world, although many will turn a blind eye to it, the reality of what Israel is facing. And when you see the administration slow walking aid to Israel that has been agreed upon, this isn't even saying, hey, let's come up with brand new ways to fulfill these things to the Israelis. These are agreements that we have with Israel for their security. They're slow walking these things, whether it be F-15s, a fleet of F-15s, or the munitions that we'd agreed upon. It's only helping Hamas. Mm-hmm. And the longer Hamas can survive with these hostages in their captivity, using them as human shields, not really caring about their lives at all, the likelihood of their survival greatly diminishes. So the problem that we see here and what we fight for is for the administration to recognize this reality.
Yeah.
And instead of giving sweetheart deals to Hamas to try to get them to come to the table, join Israel in demanding the release of the hostages before anything else can be negotiated.
Right. And that's where I would maybe just brag a little bit on the ACLJ and the work that we do, because that is really literally our job, is to keep pointing. I know you mentioned it earlier, Jordan mentioned it earlier on this broadcast. We are sending a response to the Commission of Inquiry at the United Nations. Now, the whole title of that is Commission of Inquiry on the Occupied Palestinian Territory. So in the title of this supposedly independent commission, you already see the bias, but they release report after report. Just like you said, Hamas, they are the greatest spin masters. They take truth and reality and actually just turn it on its head and make the, you know, Israel, who is the innocent victim of terrible crimes, they turn them to be the aggressor. They turn them to make them the oppressor and the bad guy. And so our job is always to come in, and we do this regularly, and we do it unceasingly. We do it consistently. We come in and we remind them, okay, you're not looking at law. You're not looking at history. You're not looking at facts. Here are the facts. Here's the law. Here's the history. And you are completely wrong about this. Israel is not an occupier. They have an absolute legal right to be in those territories. Those are Israel's rightful territories. They have a right to self-defense under international law. We point that out time and time again. We'll do that to the administration as well. And we just keep pointing to the truth. And we believe that in the end, truth will win out and Israel will be vindicated.
And folks, as you've seen today on this broadcast, you've seen the way that we analyze what's going on between the administration and the Prime Minister of Israel, whether it be the case in Nevada, which we filed our amended complaint in that 13 months ago and are in now the discovery phase of that case. But we're fighting for the rights of a student that have been violated in the way that she was forced to perform obscene content in her high school class. And we have attorneys that are working diligently on that. But also, as the hostages fall out of the news because the TVs are taken over with the protest on campus or the fight between Prime Minister Netanyahu and President Biden, we don't forget the hostages. We don't forget the students that have their rights violated. We are nimble enough at the ACLJ to handle all of these for a long time, whether it be 13 months with that student, since October 7th, when hostages were taken for these hostages, as we continue to fight and advocate on behalf of hostages, or whether it be like the whistleblowers, Marcus Allen, that took a long time. 27 months he was without pay, and we got a victory in that case. We can do that only because of your support of the ACLJ. We don't charge our clients for this work. Go to aclj.org today and make a donation. We appreciate it.